You're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. You'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in.
Before you get the rest of the story, I'd love to share a quick message from today's sponsor.
Hey, y'all. Just going to take a quick break from this conversation to let you know about the sponsor of today's episode. That sponsor is, well, frankly, it's me. It's Lee Brown University. Look, it's no secret that real estate is crazy competitive, getting more so every day. And when the pie doesn't get any bigger, but the people wanting a piece of it do, you've got to figure out a competitive advantage. And that's why I created Lee Brown University. It's everything you need from soup to nuts, cradle to grave, point A to point B, whatever point B is. Each of you has different goals. So maybe you're a new to the career realtor, or you're a super experienced pro who can't figure out that next level. There's something in my course that's going to help you break through. It's designed for you before I even met you. So enroll in Lee Brown University today. You go to www.leebrownu.com and I'll see you there. Now back to this amazing content.
Hello, friends. I'm Lee Brown. You've landed on Crazy Shit in Real Estate. And as with every other episode, you don't know what you're about to listen to, but luckily I do. Whoop, whoop. It's a wonderful conversation with a young entrepreneur named Dan Bro. He is from the upstate of New York. You're going to get not just some real estate stories today. You're going to get a little real estate education and a little motivation to get your days back on track. I think you're going to love this conversation. So enjoy it, and I'll see you on the other side. Nice to see you. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, happy to be here.
All right. Tell me a little bit about you. What do you do in the world, and how did you come to land on crazy shit in real estate?
Yeah. So I am first and foremost a husband and father, two little kids. Daughter is almost three. Son is almost one.
Oh, you're in fun days. When they're both potty trained, your life gets so easy.
I bet. Not there yet, but looking forward to it.
A year away.
Yeah. And up here in upstate New York, have a real estate business where we are primarily focused on wholesaling. Been doing real estate investing for 5 years now. Been in sales for 13. Heavily into personal development. And right now running after some really tough times in the past where I almost had to file bankruptcy. Now hitting a point where we're running a very healthy and profitable wholesaling operation here, averaging about 10 deals a month and looking to grow from here.
All right, perfect. So my audience is a mix of regular people and also real estate professionals who may or may not have a great handle on what exactly wholesaling is outside of the we buy ugly houses people that are out there. Yep. So give them a quick snapshot about what it is and how your operation is not icky, but is actually providing solutions.
Yeah. So the basics of it, traditional people that are looking to sell their houses, wholesaling, selling to a cash buyer is probably not their best option because they don't have big problems. They are just looking to get as much money as they can. And so they just list their house on the market. Makes total sense. Most people do. What makes sense for someone to sell to a cash buyer would be when they have some sort of a problem. And so they need to sell either their house more quickly, or they need to have it be as convenient and easy as can possibly be. And so we're working with the 5 to 10% of people that have an issue that needs to be solved. And so we come in and we offer them a quick and usually quick, if that's what they're looking for, because sometimes they're looking for a flexible timeline or a long timeline with the certainty of knowing their house is sold. So the timeline can vary, but they're looking for something convenient and they're looking for certainty that their problem can be solved. And so we are able to provide that solution to them. And then before we end up buying it, we find another investor, usually a flipper or a landlord who might be interested in buying that property. And then we sell it to them. And basically we collect a finder's fee.
So when you talk about the scenarios that keep people from doing a traditional real estate listing or sale, give us an example of what you see. Are we talking like hoarder houses? Are we talking non-payment tenants? Are we talking massive repair issues or title issues or all the above?
All of the above. Yeah, we see.
Not on the same house, but I'm sure that happens sometimes too.
Yeah. So a lot of people, especially with COVID, a lot of people got scared off of listing their house and having people come through for showings and open houses, or maybe they had a bad experience with a real estate agent in the past and they just don't want to deal with it again. Sometimes maybe they inherited a house and they just want nothing to do with it and they just want it gone as quickly as possible. Sometimes the house is in serious disrepair and they either can't fix it because they can't afford to, or they don't want to. They're just done. They want to walk away and wipe their hands clean of it. So it really comes down to they have some problem that needs to be solved. And it usually boils down to some emotional problem. Something is going on that is causing them stress. And it's they're feeling worried or anxious or frustrated. And maybe it's that non-paying tenant that they're just done with. They just want to be done as quickly as can possibly be. And so then putting it on the market, waiting for showings, open houses, multiple negotiations back and forth, they just don't want to do it.
So have you seen an escalation in this since the pandemic started with all of these eviction moratoria that have been put in place by the federal government? Are you seeing any landlords walking away to you as a wholesaler?
Yeah. So there was, I mean, especially right now with it getting lifted and then put back in place.
What you wanted to say was the unconstitutional takings clause. It's the unconstitutional behavior of the CDC violating the takings clause. Is that what you wanted to say? Because I personally, my blood pressure is very high about the overreach of our federal government and how it's hurting regular people. This is not designed to hurt big hedge funds. It hurts regular landlords. But a non-paying tenant, some people just can't stomach it forever.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, most people that do own rental properties, they don't have these massive portfolios and millions of dollars. They maybe have a couple and they rely on that income and the banks still want their money. And the majority of the stories that I've heard from landlords that I work with, their tenants aren't going through financial difficulties. They're just not paying because they don't have to and because the landlords can't do anything about it. So I know plenty of people that are getting out of that because they're just fed up and done with it.
So when we look at the buyers, I just want to change angles here. So you find the property owner who's done. They need somebody else to take this property. And so solution number one is you're going to give them the solution. And then you got to find the person on the other end who's going to actually do something with the property. So you're compensated, like you said, with that finder's fee. Do you find any situations where nonprofits are your buyers? I'm just thinking about this. I currently serve as the chair for my local Habitat for Humanity. And we're having, of course, the same shortage of housing that everybody else has. And we serve a different demographic of the population, different socioeconomic group, where it's even more challenging because of affordability. I'm just curious if you have had those kind of partnerships occur.
That's really interesting. I've never worked with a nonprofit for the purchase side of things.
We might have to create something, Dan, because that might be an elegant solution to a lot of different people, since it just occurred to me while we're sitting here talking.
Yeah, I like it.
Okay, so back to what you do as a wholesaler. I got to ask you a question that realtors want to know the answer to, because realtors don't like wholesalers. Let's just go ahead and lay that out there. And the realtors who try to be a wholesaler and a retail realtor are very much walking a thin line when it comes to licensing, because you've got a different audience than you do with a regular house. It's just different segment, like you said, 5 to 10% of the population. So when you buy a house, if the market value is X, are you buying it for X minus 20% or X minus 10%? What would you say is the ish discount that somebody receives in exchange for the convenience? Because it's not that you're just going in there and lowballing it. There's a time and money value at play here. And I think that's what the public needs to understand. For some people, time and convenience is more important than a top dollar scenario, or else they would do the staging and the HGTV stuff, but not everybody has the desire or the wherewithal. So what's the ish number that you deal with And I know it changes house by house.
Oh, sure. So it can, like you said, it can really vary. But one thing I want to emphasize is that the people that we work with on these type of transactions, their top concern is not money. It's not getting as much as they can possibly can get. It's solving their issue. It's getting out of this worry. That's what we're there to do. So I always say the price is a reflection of the problem. And so most people don't have these major problems. They're looking to upsize or downsize, or they got a promotion or something. And so they are looking to get as much money as they can. So they put their house on the market because they don't have a big problem. The people that have big problems, they want their problems solved beyond getting as much money as they can possibly get. So when we're working with them, we focus on solving their problem. And then the price that we arrive at is just the best option for us to be able to operate as a business so that we can still provide for our business, to provide for our buyers, so that because they want to make a profit as well, and still solve the problem of the homeowner. So the price can vary. I mean, sometimes we'll get a house that's in pretty good shape, and we might be able to pay a lot more for it. Sometimes the houses are in terrible shape and they need almost a complete gut. And so then it might be 50 cents on the dollar of what it could be worth when it's all fixed up. But it can vary dramatically based on the problem and the condition of the house.
And I love how you've landed on it a couple of times. And I want to point out that real estate is so unique as an asset class, because anything else that we buy and sell tends to be the item or the service. But real estate has that third emotional piece that gets interwoven in. And even investors have massive amounts of emotion tied to the real property that they own. And of course, homeowners get very attached to the memories and the things that they've spent time on in the house. So you're exactly right that everything is a reflection of the problem, and that's going to be a reflection of what emotions are dialed in. And it's the wildest thing about real estate to me, and I don't know that anybody understands it until you start having those one-on-one conversations with the person who's in the property or the person who owns the property they'd like to get rid of. I'm curious as to how many people you can actually help that you talk to. I mean, are there half of them that you're able to help, or a third of them, or what's the ratio of Dan visits with a property versus Dan can provide a solution?
Yeah. So typically what we end up with is between 25 to 35%. And some of those might end up actually converting to a traditional listing, because we do have licensed real estate agents on our team, because sometimes that is the best option for them. And so we're just trying to match their problem to a solution that we can offer. We're never trying to convince them to go any certain way. I'm never trying to convince them to take the lowest offer. Every single time I talk to a homeowner, I ask them, why not just put it on the market? And they'll either tell me one of two things. They'll either say, yeah, I probably will do that, and then we'll go down that path. Or they'll tell me all the reasons why that's not a good option for them. And so I think that's where a lot of wholesalers get a bad name, is that they try to convince people to sell their house at a massive discount. And that's just not what we do. We help them to arrive at what they think is the best solution. And if we can offer that, great. If it's someone else, that's fine too. But we're never trying to push people. We're never convincing people. We're just helping to solve a problem.
Well, you can't. I mean, you're raising a one-year-old and a three-year-old. You got a wife to answer to every night. And so if you are out there behaving with a lack of honor and integrity in the community where you all live, that's a massive generational impact on who your kids are going to wind up being and what people think about the family structure that you're living in. So I think we always forget that too, that our business lives are by nature intertwined with our personal lives in real estate, because we are also neighbors even while we're providing these solutions. Now, of course, you are on Crazy Shit in Real Estate, which means my listeners and viewers are always looking for some of those stories of, y'all are never going to believe this. And obviously, you probably see more crazy things than the average real estate professional. So it was probably hard for you to think of something that was just, you can't unsee it, basically, the eye bleach situation. So I can't wait for you to tell all of our friends here hanging out with us today, what's the crazy thing Dan's got to tell that you just still can't believe you saw it, heard it, experienced it?
Well, one thing I don't like talking about it, but a lot of people like to hear it, and because some people can relate to it. But the point where I was, when I had started in real estate and things were going pretty well and being ambitious and wanting to go bigger and bigger, I started taking on some bigger projects. One thing led to another, and I took on a historic luxury flip. Huge, huge mistake.
Are we talking like a 100-year-old house or like a 150-year-old house? How historic are we talking, Dan?
It was built in 1852.
That's a different thing than a 1952, ain't it?
Woo! Yes, yes. So this was truly one-of-a-kind building, cobblestone. It was originally a schoolhouse, and then it was a Masonic temple for the Freemasons, and we converted it to a single-family residence.
You fell in love with it, didn't you?
Oh, man. I mean, it was amazing. Turned out beautiful. Put high-end, top-of-the-line finishes throughout. But even to start, it took 6 months of meetings with the town boards and to get everything approved. I mean, like 350 pages of documents to support my proposal. Months and months of work. So then it was a one-of-a-kind property, so it was sort of difficult to find out the comps and what it could be worth. Major overruns on time and cost, a $30,000 asbestos remediation bill here. Each window, because it was historic, had to be like the original. And so we had some, it was like 24 windows. We had to do real wood. We did mahogany, original glass. Each window cost $3,000 alone.
Did you say each window was $3,000?
Each window, 24 of them.
Holy crap. And so you're in New York, did you have to do double pane so you'd have some insulation? Because an 1850 house wouldn't have insulation.
Right. So we had to put in, so we had original, well, they had to be single pane. We had as close as we could match to the general style storm windows. But I mean, yeah, it was a big mess. All through that, we went so over on budget. There's just things we couldn't expect. When you run into a 160, 70-year-old building, you don't know what you're going to get. And
then at a certain point, you're like, I mean, 30 grand more, just go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
You lose sight of
Mess. So, I mean, that whole project took an entire year. During that time, I had started a construction company and had a very skilled craftsman sort of running the operations side, running the jobs and the crews. He turned out to not at all be who I thought he was. And so both of these were going on at the same time. The construction company being completely mismanaged. There was major overturn, jobs were being underbid, and expenses were going through the roof. And so we ran out of money mid-build of someone's lake house. I had to lay off 7 guys. I had to surrender a bunch of our like big machinery and equipment. You know, there was all these pending lawsuits with the homeowner, and then the historic property at the same time was a major stress. I had just been married earlier that year. Our daughter was still an infant, and I was going to the doctor because of all the stress. I had developed an ulcer. We listed it, and all these people said, oh, it's such a beautiful property. You're definitely going to sell it. And the price expectations were all over the place. Like, some people thought it would be like 1.2 million. Some people thought like 600,000. It was like a crazy price range. And so it was like, all these people were coming through interested, and no offers, price drop. At the end of all this, I ended up about $400,000 in debt, and I was barely sleeping. We were selling stuff out of our house just to survive, like selling our side tables, our lamps, our TV, my truck, selling rental properties. I emptied out my 401k, and I was meeting with bankruptcy attorneys. We were wondering if we were going to lose the house. It was rough. It was about as the most stressed I've ever been in my entire life. And so went through all that. It was pretty much done with real estate. I was saying it's not worth it. Why would I go through this again? I have this young family to support. I need to find something secure and stable that I can just provide for my family. Went back into the medical device space, which I had previously been in, was fortunate enough to get that job. And then not too long after, COVID hit and everything shut down. And so again, I was just sitting there, still had all this debt. And I thought, I can't just do nothing. I have to find a way out of this, and decided to get back into real estate, but was done with flipping, done with rentals, needed something quicker and less risky. And so decided to get into wholesaling again, but wanted to make it a true business that was systematized and had true processes. And so found some great coaches and mentors and really developed a strong business, and to the point where now we're a team of 9 and we're consistently doing about 10 deals a month. Average wholesale fee is right around $16,000. So, I mean, to me, it's wild to think about in not that long of a time how far we've really come and what a just difference it's been.
Okay, so you already mentioned that you're into personal development, which obviously you'd have to be in some way to go from we're doing good things and then we run out of money and we're in beyond the bottom. Now you have to come back out. What would you say was the best thing that you did to get yourself in the mind space to fight back? Because a lot of people, especially in today's society, Dan, they don't have any resilience. They want to give up. They'd rather rely on the government and just sit around and say, woe is me. You obviously didn't have any time left to be woe is me. You found a way to every day make the phone calls. What would you say is your secret? How do our listeners and viewers get a little taste of what got you there? Because I'm sure that we have listeners out there right now that are thinking, damn, how did he do it? I can't barely get up in the morning right now. What's not the secret, but what's a thing that helped you?
Yeah. So the few key things are habits. So habits are number one. So what we do regularly is going to determine our habits. What we habitually do determines our future. And so it's so easy to not consciously choose our habits. We just adopt them from our parents or the people we hang out with. And so when you get off track, it's easy to adopt these really unhealthy habits. You wake up in the morning, you check social media. That's the last thing you want to do. You're going to have thoughts of envy and jealousy and like bad news just feeding your mind. That's the last thing you want to do. And so getting back into my healthy habits was super key. And so one of the most important things that I talk about is asking yourself really good, empowering questions first thing in the morning. Because no matter what, we're asking ourselves questions in the morning, whether we realize it or not. We're asking ourselves, why do I have to get up right now? Or can I just sleep a little bit longer? Would it really matter if I slept in a little bit? Would it matter if I skipped the gym today? Like, why do I have to get dressed this way? Why do I have to put a suit on? Like, people ask themselves these questions, but they don't even realize it.
We're all 3-year-olds. Those are all 3-year-old questions. Why? Yep. Why? Do I have to? Why? Mm-hmm. Why, Dad? No. Why?
Yep. And so taking control of that is so key, because the way you start the day, it sets the tone for the whole rest of it. And so you wake up and you ask yourself questions that make you feel good. What am I grateful for? What am I really excited about today? Why is today going to be great? Who do I love? Who loves me? All these questions. And you can ask yourself whatever questions you want, but asking yourself something that makes you feel empowered, excited, grateful, whatever those top level feelings you want to feel on a regular basis, you have to ask yourselves those questions. Otherwise, you're leaving it up to chance. And there are too many people out there, too many agencies and companies fighting for your attention and fighting for your mind space. And you need to take control of that and ask yourself those questions and determine your own focus. Because if you're letting someone else take your focus, you're going to be focused on whatever they are talking about. Yeah. That's why, like, I never Some people say I might be disconnected, but I try to watch as little news as I possibly can because most news is bad news. They're pushing a fear agenda and they're trying, you never see in the news like sunny days ahead, like it'll be like major storm coming or like they're trying to get you anxious so that you read into it. But if it just said sunny, beautiful days, be like, okay, great. And then you just go on with your day and you don't read into it. So they're fighting for that attention. And you need to keep guard of your mind and make sure that you are determining your focus and not letting someone else. So that's the first thing. The second thing I would say is community and being surrounded by people that want to support you and are there to help you and have your best interest at heart and are doing the things that you want to be doing or have similar goals. And community is so unbelievably important because those people are going to be there when you're struggling. They're going to root you on when you're doing well. You can feed off their energy. If you're trying to do the same things as other people, they have the same vision, the same values. Like that is who you want to be surrounded by. That's who you want to spend your time with. And so when I was going through those tough times, like I leaned on a lot of other people. Like I needed a lot of help. I certainly did not get out of that by myself. And I think anyone who's doing anything significant has had a ton of help along the way and continues to get a ton of help because we don't have the time or the resources or the energy to do everything ourselves. And leaning on the expertise and the experiences and the knowledge and mindset of others is so key. And I think people, when they get stuck, they're trying to do everything themselves. And they forget about this network and reaching out and leaning on others is not weakness. It's a strength. You're stronger together. And I think when people are really struggling, they forget that and they feel alone and they feel like they need to do it all themselves, but no one does anything themselves.
Well, that's like that old fallacy in your faith life where you might say, oh, I can worship God by myself. Well, actually, you can do some things by yourself, but it's very clear in the scripture that it's where two or more are gathered. And that's exactly what you're saying, because when you're in community with other people, you hear differently, you think differently, you process differently, and it's just a different overall positive energy that can take you forward, which is why it has been very frustrating for a lot of people during the COVID era when they've been told to stay away from other humans, where that's totally counterproductive to that building of community that lifts people up. Dan, if somebody wants to reach out to you and find out more about your business and find out more about what you're doing in the world, how do they find you in the upstate?
Yeah, so Instagram is the best way to connect. It's at @actiondanbro. And bro is spelled B-R-O, because if I put the way my last name is actually spelled, people get confused. So it is pronounced bro. My last name is pronounced bro. So yep, Action Dan Bro on Instagram.
And I'll include that in the show notes for this episode, guys, to make it easy for you to go find and follow and connect online. And maybe that will lead to a real life connection later on. Dan, thank you for coming on the show, for giving us some insights into the wholesaling world, and also for being vulnerable about your own challenges, because most of us can identify more with somebody that's had challenges than somebody that's had it perfect their whole life. I wish you all the best with the business continuing to thrive and with the family, and I can't wait to see you in person.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
And guys, if you enjoyed this episode, you know what to do. That's 5 stars, a positive review, a comment, a like, a share. And most importantly, if you want to come tell your own real estate related crazy life story, hit me up on social media. We'll feature you in the future. Until then, we'll see you next time.
As always, I'm so super thrilled that you joined in for more crazy shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or frankly, you just need to one-up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram @LeeThomasBrown or tweet me @LeeBrown or frankly, any social network where you hang out. I'm there, and if you had some fun, then you totally want to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.